Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. I'm your host, Shanae, and today I am here with Selena. Hi, Selena.
Hey.
So, I think we have a lot to talk about today, particularly the healthcare system and immigration, because there's been a lot going on with those two subjects in the country in the last week and a half, I believe. Yeah. So, as much of you, I'm pretty sure, have heard about the story of Kenise, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, Simona Dabo, and she was a 33-year-old mother and wife who passed away a few days ago at PMH. So many people may think, oh, well, this happens every day, but I think what made our story so heartbreaking was she went on live and she was explaining her situation, and she basically said that she was supposed to receive some blood. The nurses told her she's supposed to receive blood because her platelets were declining, I believe. And she said days went by, she heard nothing. And then I think the day before she did the live, or that day, some nurses came to her, or a nurse came to her and told her casually that she needed to get some people who donate blood to her because her platelet count was no longer at 20, but was now at a 7, which is really low. Right, so she was on Facebook basically telling people like her story and saying that that really bothered her, and talked about the lack of professionalism and the lack of care by personnel at the hospital. And she was also urging people to come and give blood, and she was even willing to pay people $50 a bag for blood in efforts to save her life. However, unfortunately, she did not make it, and her passing rocked the nation, basically. And people were really, really upset about it because the video, her live, went viral. A lot of people saw it, you know, picked up the story. And it's been in discussion ever since. Her family came up and spoke on the news. And I even saw that they started a foundation in her name. And I joined foundation's page. And a lot of people were sharing similar stories regarding negative experiences at PMH, and even people on the news as well, when they went out and they spoke with the public. So I just want to know your thoughts on it. A lot of people were furious, and they want answers and they want change. And I think that's rightfully so, because I don't understand why something like that was handled the way it was. Now, this is, of course, if our account is correct. However, the hospital has launched, but personnel at the hospital, I think it's the PHA, have launched an investigation into the matter, but they don't have any concrete evidence at the time. However, but if this is true, which and I believe that it is, because this isn't the first time we've heard horror stories coming out of PMH. And even I have a personal story, not my personal story, but a story about my father that happened years ago. So that was in 2006 when he got into an accident. And it's just like the same trend has continued. And it's really sad that people are in this field, and they are, some of them are so lackadaisical, and they don't really have the passion or the care for it anymore.
I would first like to say condolences to the family, because it really was tragic the way in which she passed. Just like you stated earlier, we don't have all the facts. We don't know exactly what happened. We only have one side of the story. And so I just want to preface by saying that anything that is said can be subject to change due to new details that came up. So me and a group of friends, we were having the same conversation over the, I think it was yesterday, in our group chat about the situation and how tragic it was. And one of them brought up a very valid point. I don't think anybody goes out their way to say, hey, I want this person to die. I want to harm this person. I don't think, as lackadaisical as anybody could be, I don't think that's their end goal to say that I want to end this person's life. Our hospital is not operating where it needs to be operating. It's very understaffed. The personnel are overworked and underpaid. The infrastructure on the whole is just deteriorating, and we are in a crisis because of this situation. And I think stories like these really bring out just how serious the consequences of these things are. I'm not simplifying the fact that more could not have been done to prevent such a cause from happening. But we don't know all the details regarding this tragic incident. But what we can, and like you said, many persons were sharing the same experience. And so some of them don't end tragically. However, they all of them do highlight the fact that we have a serious problem when it comes to our country and our healthcare. When you look at, I wouldn't even want to compare our country to any other country because we are still a developing country. But I think more needs to be pumped into our healthcare. I don't think one hospital cannot suffice. Well, I should say one public hospital. Even two, we have two hospitals. Two hospitals is not enough for one country, especially in Nassau where we're overpopulated and it's just so much demand, especially when it comes to the healthcare. I just believe that more can be done, and I would hope that it doesn't take more and more of these type of stories to wake us up to the facts, and not wake us up, wake up those who are in charge of our healthcare system to the fact that we need to take our health more serious. I yes, tourism is our first industry, and I really do believe that we need to start moving away from that and stop putting so much importance in tourism, because if we made it our number one industry. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but I do believe that we need to start making some type of movement away from it because it's so very fickle and takes so much money. And it's like, basically, it's like that's what all these governments are focusing on, selling lands for commercial use, building new hotels, buying this, buying that just to boost the tourism economy within the Bahamas. And it's draining our country. Look at our healthcare system. Look at our education system. Look at our roads. Look at our islands. There's many of our islands are still underdeveloped. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm turning 23. And from I've come of age to understand politics. I've been hearing the same thing over and over for every rally. Number one thing is tourism, creating new jobs through tourism, building this place for tourism. I mean, building this place, yes, to drawing persons, more tourists to the Bahamas, but it offers more jobs. And when you turn around and look, it's not doing what it's being promised. And so I think it's a dream, but in reality, it's going to take something really drastic in order for that to happen. But hey, Martin Luther King had a dream and it came true, right? So you could only dream that, you know, it's not so much about what's padding their pocket and what's, you know, boosting their class, because it ain't coming down to the poor man. But anyway, but really starting to really do things for the people, for the country, because it's really sad what happened. But I don't think we could put all blame on the practitioners or the staff. A lot of it, they might just not had the blood, you know. We ever stop to think about that? It's just so much different things that could play a part within all of this, and it's easy to cast blame when you're not, you know, under heat. Under some of them have been going since COVID, like, you know, many of them had to watch their colleagues and loved ones die, but they couldn't stop working because, you know, they had to operate. You know, it's so much things, you know, in play, because if they were to sit down and say they need rest, they need to take care of the body, they might jump up and say, I know a lot of persons say about teachers, you know the profession you were coming in. You know, it's so easy from the outside to cast a finger, but not really knowing what's really going on behind closed doors. So that's my thoughts regarding that. Again, my sincerest condolences to the family, because losing a loved one, no matter what the situation is indeed a tragic thing to happen.
Okay, so you said a lot. So I don't know. Pinpoint some of the things I definitely agree with. Some things I don't necessarily agree with. Because at the beginning, when you started your thoughts, you said that you don't think it's their end game to say, I want to end somebody's life. I disagree to an extent because I feel as though from the minute you knew this woman needed blood for 4 or 5 days now, right? You told this woman that you were going to put it, you were going to bring her the blood. You didn't bring the blood. You wait 4, 5 whole days to let this woman know, okay, you need to get people to bring blood in on your behalf. I feel as though that is careless. I understand that they may be overworked. I understand that They understaff. I get those things. However, Selena, I'm sure you've had run-ins at the hospital where you've met people with very disgusting attitudes, and all of them are not like that. So my thing is, what is your excuse? Why you have to be so disgusting to me, but I can meet a nurse down the hall or a doctor down the hall who's nothing but pleasant? What is your excuse? That's my thing. I know that everything is against them, but at the same time, it's like, wait, come on, like, being kind and caring isn't going to take anything off you. Like, I don't get that. And those 3 4 days difference, that lady could have still been here today. And that's what bothers me, because it may not have been their intent. Like you said, they didn't, it wasn't premeditated. It wasn't nothing in their brain saying, oh, I could kill this person today. However, their actions. And it may not be, it may not have been that nurse who was there that day. She may not have been there when the lady first was admitted, or she may not have been handling the case because nobody's one patient. However, I mean, like, whoever dropped the ball in that whole scenario, whoever, someone, one day she gets blood, the next day they tell her that she has to get people to bring in blood. There was some miscommunication there. Whoever dropped the ball, they need to do better, because if imagine how much other people they may be doing that with. And I feel like it's unfair, and it doesn't only fall on healthcare professionals. I also blame the government to an extent, because the healthcare system is in shreds, and I don't understand why, because they put a certain amount of money towards it for every year, but it almost is still like nothing changing. That's how it appears to me, and it sucks. And that's why a lot of people who could afford insurance, they go and they get it, because that's a terrible, you never want to be there. Some people just be wait, sitting down in the waiting room and it's dropped down dead because they're waiting there for hours and hours and hours. And it shouldn't have to be like that. It should not be like that. It is. It's a sad reality. But I feel like more could be done. You talked about tourism and how we pump so much. We pump millions of dollars into tourism every single year. Every year we pump millions of dollars into tourism. We can't take a little million and flow it towards healthcare or something. Like, so I feel as though, like, come on, me. Like, I feel like there's more that could be done on us as people. Some of the nurses who are not up to par, some of them are very nice people and very easy, but when they are pleasant, but you have some out there who are who just think like we can't, there are a few bad apples. That's just what it is. And it's sad that she had to die as a result of that. And then also talking to the blood issue, you said that they may not have had no blood. I agree, that may have very well been the case, but the point of the matter is they took so long to tell her that she didn't have, that they didn't have blood. So those 3 days she was waiting, 4 days she was waiting, she could have been getting people to bring blood for her. But she was unaware of the situation because there was a miscommunication. And as a result of that miscommunication, she's no longer with us. So that's the issue that people have, the fact that there was that miscommunication that cost her life. You know what I'm saying? And it sucks. It really sucks, because this isn't the first time. There was a lady, I think in 2020, I read a story. Because, you know, like when stuff become trending on Facebook, a lot of things that happen similar, at least that's what happens to me. A lot of stuff that happens, that happened that was similar, arise. I think it was Eyewitness or 242, I don't know what's up. It was somebody who covered the story, and the woman was basically, it was the same exact situation. And I also saw one where a lady, she had had a child, and she was mistreated during that time. And then also another lady, she just won her case a couple of days ago against a doctor, and she had a baby at PMH, and the baby ended up passing away, and the court ruled the doctor was negligent and in his actions, so he was ordered to pay the young lady. So it's like, this is a trend. This is a trend, and I feel like it's something that we should correct, that we need to correct. And it's up to all of us. We as behemoths have to fight for change, have to want for change. And that goes with when you go to PMH paying your bill, because a lot of behemoths don't pay their bill at PMH. The little $10, $15 they ask you for, y'all won't pay the registration fee. I think we owe them
I think payments owe $7 million in there. The last time I saw that, I was mostly 2019 or 2020. So it may have increased since then. So y'all pay your bill, your little $10-$15 registration fee. Be kind to people. And we have to fight for the legislation that we want to get things done. That's just what it is. And I pray that nurses who up and coming are more pleasant. I saw a lot of them advocating on my Facebook saying that they know that the system is broken. They know what they're going into and they want to fix it. So I hope it happens. But you know, we could say one thing when you're on the outside, but when you actually get into it, it may be a different story. So I feel like a lot more could have been done to save that, like, that lady's life. A simple miscommunication resulted in her passing away. My condolences to her family. And I pray and hope that we can try to fix this problem so that other young people, young, not even just young people, just people in general, don't have to die as a result of lack of equipment, as a result of lack of staff, as a result of just lack of care. So we wanna roll those things out and try get the hospital facilities to be the best that it could be. We've been fighting this issue for decades, so we just have to come up with solutions. You made valid points as well. So yeah, that was a good, that was some good points.
Yeah, so moving on to our next story. Well, the next few stories are all tied up into one. We've been talking about this constantly the last couple of weeks. Well, months probably. It's been a recurring conversation in Bahamian society, and that's the topic of illegal immigration. So a few days ago, the United States Coast Guard intercepted nearly 400 illegal migrants near Key Sahl. So the Coast Guard took them to Nago, where they handed them over to the Defense Force and immigration. And they would be processed and detained because apparently the government built a temporary facility there. I think it was finished in December and it could hold up to 800 people. So I don't know if maybe that's in Nago's like someplace where they like to go. So they set something up there. I don't know. But the Department of Immigration is working with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to ensure that intercepted migrants are repatriated as quickly as possible. So I think for me, at least this is my thoughts on it. I think I can't remember what country it was, but there was a country that when you try to come into their waters illegally, they literally just pick you up on the boat and they send you right back. You laughing, no, like they send you right back, like they have bread and food and stuff on the boat, and they would send you back to where you come from. And I know we was having discussions about this maybe a couple of years ago, and people were saying, like, I think it was some international body was saying that, oh, it would be inhumane. But I'm like, how is it inhumane? Someone please explain that one to me. Because what's the difference between me bringing them to Nassau or New Providence or Nagua or Andrews, wherever I have a facility or whatever's nearest? And I putting them there, they could bathe, they could eat. What's the difference between picking them off the boat, putting them on my boat, to letting them do the same, letting them bathe, letting them eat and stuff like that, and then taking them back to the country? What's I don't understand how that's inhumane. I feel like that would be the quickest and the easiest way for us to not have to worry about housing these people, because we spend a lot of money not only building these facilities, housing them here, and then we have them here for months. We have the legal immigrants here for months, and then we pay for these people to go back on planes. On planes. So why we could cut all of them? We probably could cut that cost in half, and literally turn them right back on the boat. Buy a couple big boats, or bring them back to a base, load them up on that boat, and then go out and take them back. Because I don't understand, like, yes, I don't understand, but it is a lot on us to have to source funds or allocate such a large amount of funds to doing stuff like that.
I don't see how it's inhumane that what you're talking about, because at the end of the day, they are coming in illegally. It's a difference if they were coming in the legal way and you just saying, oh, because there are immigrants, we're sending you back, we're not accepting anybody. For them, no, I'm not. crazy. I have a friend who tells me I'm an Adidas. But My heart always goes out to immigrants on a whole, especially when it comes to Haitians, because that's where mainly with my studies when it came to Bahamian history, when it came we focused on that. And if you hear the horror stories, God knows it. I'm a big softie, and so like I would be running too. And I'm just saying, like, I think they're demonized a lot, and it's so unfair. But at the end of the day, the law is the law, and I think that's why some persons might say it's be inhumane, because you don't know why they're coming here. So to just to put them back on the boat and send them back without like letting them claim asylum or whatever the case may be. But I don't think they're allowed to claim asylum once they come illegally, right?
No, I don't think they are because they already breathe
Okay.
the normally.
So exactly. So yeah, I don't see where I say all that to say I don't see where I mean, I think it's kind of cold, but I wouldn't say that it's inhumane, because at the end of the day they are coming in illegally, and I don't see what the difference is if you take them off their boat, put them on a nicer boat, let them clean whatever the case may be, and take them right back, because like you say, it is a lot of money. You do spend a lot of money dealing with housing and taking care of them until they're processed, and like you say, it's a very long period sometimes. So, but then again, that's how these people is make their money. That's what you need to talk about. The Bahamians who are exploiting these individuals to bring them here and then
Yeah, we talked
make
about
it up.
that last year sometime when the I think it was like 300 who came over on a boat, and it was Bahamian's man in the boat, I believe, and they charged them between 3,000 to 8,000 per head.
Yes, ma'am.
Per head. And this is so it's so the question is too, how do we find these people who are bringing them over and navigating these waters, you know what I'm saying? So I definitely That's definitely a good point. But I agree with you saying me personally, I sympathize with individuals who country is going through any type of war, any type of political, social, economical unrest, because God knows it that yeah, it's hard for the average person in the Bahamas, but when we look at the country as a whole, for the most part, we're surviving, and a lot of countries have it a lot worse in terms of political unrest, social unrest, economic issues. Not saying that we don't have our fair share of it, you know, but we don't have wars, we don't have militants walking around place just taking what they want and stuff like that. Like we're not in a state of anarchy, you know. If I
Honestly.
was in that position, I would also run for the hills. However, they know that when they go on this journey, they can very well be caught, and they know what most of them, I would say, they would know that what the consequences of it are, because some of them may have family members, or they know that if I get caught, then we get sent back, because I'm sure it's happened to before who they know. So when you embark on a journey like that, if you get caught, you know you got to go back home. And people know that. I mean, I would assume that they know that. And not even that's not even the only danger. That another danger is the fact that you may not even make it,
I was just about to say.
because from traveling from Haiti to here, some of these boats don't even have engines. Some of them is just like sailboats, and then they pack so tightly on these boats, because I saw a picture of the boat that came on that was caught near Kisal, and literally the boat was packed to the brim with people. I don't know how they were sleeping. Like, they literally like sitting very tightly together. So it's dangerous in itself. And it's just like, if they are willing to do that just to come here in search of a better life, then hats off to them. However, our country has rules and regulations, and the rules and regulations is you can't just decide, you know, like, on a boat day. Like I moved to a different country, it works like that. There's certain paperwork that you have to complete, whether that's a work permit, whether you put in for citizenship, residency, whatever, and the government has to then go through the documents that you submit, and choose whether you'll be a good candidate to come and move to the Bahamas. So if you are denied, you can't come here, and if you don't do it, you automatically turn around. Like, that's just the law. So we can't allow people to come in and not abide by the law. That's just no matter how sympathetic we are for them, it just the world doesn't work like that. I can go into somebody else's country illegally. Well, I probably could, but you're not supposed to because it's the law. If you get caught, you're getting sent back and you can't go back no more. So it's rules of the land, and this has been something that we've been dealing with, and there's been a lot of illegal immigrants coming in the recent months, and a lot of people are speaking out against it, especially the Prime Minister has been speaking out against it, former MP Brian McCartney, and even Lincoln Bain. But we're gonna get to Lincoln Bain a little bit later. Yeah, so like I was saying, like these people, they're putting their lives at risk, and they're also coming here. And when they're coming here, some of them build illegal structures, which could be very detrimental to our environment, to our water tables, and very detrimental to them as well. Because some of these states, they come illegally. Talking about this particular group who was caught on Key Sal, and when they put up these structures that aren't up to code, it becomes an environmental hazard, and they can spark fires that could kill them, or it may be in unsafe areas that when hurricanes come, it may wash them away. So it's not even just like a law thing too. It's like it's for the safety of them and of us, you know? And the Prime Minister, the Honorable Brave Davis, he went to a summit meeting of the community of Latin America and Caribbean states that was held in Argentina. And he said, "The tragic situation there continues to pose a substantial threat not only to Haitians, but also to the Bahamas and neighboring countries, all of whom are experiencing a significant increase in irregular and often dangerous migration. With the support and leadership of Haiti collectively, we can, through CELAC, that is the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, and other regional organizations, can help Haitians build a path out of crisis." And I think that would be the best for all of us because they're in a bad state, and if we could help in any way that we can, that would be great. And I know a lot of behemoths like to say, "Oh, we'll be helping them for," but think about it. If they're coming here illegally, risking their lives, and a lot of behemoths don't like that they enter in our country illegally, which is breaking the law, whatever. But if you think about it, if you help them with their situation, and this would be like a regional effort, this would not only just be the Bahamas, but then you would help solve the immigration issue, which is why a lot of people saying, "Oh, we need to solve this immigration issue. So much people coming here, so much illegal immigrants coming here, or illegal Haitians coming here." But like, if you truly want to help solve the issue, then you would have to get to the cause of the issue. And one of the cause of the issue is the fact that the country is unsafe, so they're going to other countries and effort try and gain a better life. If we really wanted to stop, that's one of the ways that we can solve the issue. So I think that that's probably what the Prime Minister is trying to get at. Because we could say, "Oh, we need more defense force, or we need more boats, or we need more this, that, and next." But let's think about it. It's I don't want to say it's impossible, but it's for a country as small as us, unless a quarter of the population or an eighth of the population decides to join the defense force and the police force, I don't see us possibly being able to cover an archipelago of 700 island keys. It's just not gonna happen. At least not right now. It's gonna take a very long time to get to that point. I think that was then the last year where I was reading the article, and it said the Defense Force only had, I think, 1,900 members, and they were trying to get to 5,000. So we only have 1,900 now. I don't know how you think 1,900 people could defend that large square footage of water. Like, it's not feasible, it's not realistic when we think about it. So if we could go to these conferences, help find solutions, help the country itself, then that could possibly lead to helping solve the immigration issue, as well as toughening up our defenses and try and change our strategy in terms of maybe stop bringing them here in the first place. Look at different strategies and look at what other countries do to try and halt illegal immigration, and then maybe try to adopt some of their practices. I think that's the approach that the Prime Minister was getting at in his speech.
And I think that's probably what makes the most sense, because if you could get the support of other countries to try and help them, then it helps us in the long run as well. So I don't know. I'm making sense, you know?
Yeah, you are. I have nothing to add to
But with that being said, right? So I don't know if you saw Toledo or anyone in the audience saw, but Toledo of the Coalition of Independents, Lincoln Wayne, decided the last 2 weekends that he was gonna go around checking people's identification to see if they have work permits. And he had this work permits if they had identification cards, I guess, passports or whatever, right? And the videos went viral. And some agreed with the situation, some didn't. And I was having this conversation with my father, and I was telling him, like, I don't agree with that because that's dehumanizing, in my opinion. Because you look at me and you feel like I was a legal immigrant. Or you hear me talk and I was a legal immigrant. Not a legal immigrant. I'm an immigrant. And you automatically assume that, oh, I'm illegal. And I was telling them that, like, that's not your job. That's the job of government officials who work in immigration, who work in customs, who work in the defense force, the police force. That's their job to do those type of things. And you're not legally authorized to do that. And then he was telling me, oh no, yeah, but he's the only person taking it seriously, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, but you could say that, but the way that he's going about it is incorrect. He's going about it as though he's a vigilante. And if anybody else was to do something like this, it would be an issue. And even the Royal Bahamas Police Force, their representative, I can't remember her name yet, but the bright lady, she spoke and she was like, you have to stop doing that. You cannot just go around asking people for their identification. And she was basically urging members of the public that if somebody does this to you, you do not have to give them your information unless they are authorized personnel. She said that the authorized personnel are police force, defense force, customs, immigration officers, and I think she said customs and officers from the Department of Correction. And she said, and if you're unsure, then you could ask them for identification. She said every government worker is given an identification card. And if they don't have this on them, then they can't request these things of you. Because if you roll up on me and you ask me to show you my passport or my work permit, I can tell you to get on my face. I tell you to get on my face, I'm gonna call the police and then you harassing me. Because why are you doing that? You know what I'm saying? And I feel like it kind of is wrong in a sense. Like, I understand you wanna find illegal immigrants or whatever, but for those that are here legally, you're, what's the word? You're placing fear in them for, I don't want to say for no reason, but it's just not the right way to go about things. And I find that very terrible, in my opinion.
That's discrimination. You can't
Yeah.
discriminate. You can't do it.
But did
You
you see
can't do
the
that.
video though?
No, I didn't see the video.
So we go into the man, right? And then he asked the man for his identification. The man smiled and then he give it to him. And he's like, oh, man identification. And like, I'm in the laugh, right? But it's just like, boy, I couldn't believe what I was watching. I was like, this man did not do that. Like, he did not do that. And then, like, another conversation I was having with someone, they're like, oh, one of the places that he went to was called Paradise Island, and apparently this is a known place where some immigrants reside, and there's a storage facility, but nobody's supposed to be living there, but apparently people reside there. And the person is telling me, oh, well, he gone there, and he's supposed to be there, and blah, blah, blah. My thing is, that's not your right. You cannot place somebody under citizen's arrest because you feel like they're here illegally. You cannot do that. You cannot do that. You can't prove that. And unless they provide you with documents, and they have every right to deny giving that to you because you're not authorized personnel. So I'm like, you can't do that. That's like me thinking somebody's a murderer, and I go to them and I put them under arrest. I feel like they're a murderer. That's not how this works. That's not how this works.
It's a citizen's arrest for me. I'm sorry.
Like they was for real, like they was serious, and I was like, y'all can't think this makes sense. Like, I know, like, y'all trying to, this is your way of trying to true, but that's not how you go to do it. We have laws, why we have protocols. Sometimes they're delayed, sometimes they're not as efficient. But the whole point of having rules and regulations is not being lawless, which is what we're trying to avoid. But you're doing whatever you want, and you're taking advantage. You wouldn't try that on no one else. So if you feel like someone is doing something that they shouldn't, that they aren't supposed to be doing, report them. Simple, report them. Call immigration. Call the police force. Call someone in authority so that they could investigate the situation. You are not Sherlock Holmes, okay? You are not inspecting. Like, what are you doing? Like, let's be for real now. But that just made me mad.
The Bahamas is not a real place.
Girl, no. And I was just like, wow, like you, like this man, he really serious. Like he was really serious. And I was like, wow. But I couldn't believe my eyes. And I was just like, there's a time and a place for everything. And this ain't the time nor the place. So the last thing that I wanted to discuss today was the implementation of a national food policy, which I think is very good. But I'll give you the details. Yeah, so the Ministry of Agriculture, Marine Resources, and Family Island Affairs seeks to create a national food policy this year that will drive food security in the Bahamas, which I think is absolutely amazing. So the minister of this ministry, the Honorable Clay Sweden, said that this agricultural policy would encompass a holistic approach and incorporate regulations, legislation, and other aspects to assist farmers who have not really gotten the attention they deserve for a long time. It would also help to drive domestic investment throughout the country and find ways to initiate food production to help fight the food insecurity. UNFAO, which is the United Nations Food Agricultural Organization study, revealed that 17.2% of Bahamians suffered moderate to severe food insecurity at the height of COVID-19 between 2019 to 2021. And this initiative aims to change that. The minister also he was also went on to say that this is a step in the right direction, and although it's not going to happen overnight, because I think we import about 80% of our food, he said that this is a step in the right direction, and that hopefully over the next, I guess, couple of years, we could move closer and closer towards our goal of being food secure. And he mentioned that Israel, it took Israel 50 years to become food secure. So we're hoping to just inch our way there. And I think this is absolutely amazing because I remember when I was in college, we talked about this. We talked about the fact that we have a lot of land, that we are able to grow food. It's just that we were sold the idea that we can't grow certain foods, but I've been to farms that grow a lot of things that we weren't considered ever to be able to grow. It's possible. And we are sold this idea that we can't, but we can. And we really can because we can create environments where these things can flourish. And I think, I can't remember who the lady was. She's a journalist, but she does like her own thing. She doesn't work for a company, she works for herself. And she did a documentary on farms in Andres and how like food was going to waste and stuff like that. Like, we have these resources and we just need to use them, we need to utilize them more. So, I urge Bahamians to utilize your farmers market. There's a farmer market that happens on Gladstone Road on Saturdays. You could also visit local farms on Colburn Road. You have the Down the Road Adventure Farms, slash the Sinclair's Farm. They have like a little market you can go and buy fresh produce. There's a couple, I think it's a one called the Forbes Farm. There's a couple of farms down there. There are also some farms out east, I believe, or farm like farmers markets out east that, and west that you could go to that sell locally grown food. Because let's be honest, if I go to the store, I buy like a one super fun, I pay mostly $1.50 for that. Why doing that? And I might as well just go to the farmers market because more than likely I could get a bulk for a reasonable price. So yeah, like shop local. Don't mind these people because Super Value them, they only bring these things in from Jabim with probably pump full of chemicals or pump full of things that don't make no sense because they're trying to preserve it because it'd have to come way across the ocean. And yeah, but I think it's great that we're moving towards this goal, that we're starting more initiatives. And I hope that in the next at least in my lifetime, that we'd be able to become food secure, because I think that is something that we both need to work on.
I just agree with your sentiments. I really do believe that this is something that we have been talking. We talked about this, I think, twice on our show. Like, it really is something that needs to be put in place. If COVID taught us anything, we need to be able to produce our own food to sustain our own country. And so it's not going to happen overnight, but I do believe that this is a great initiative. And I'm just praying that, you know, it's developed and sustained throughout whatever government comes into power, because, you know, they like to just cancel everything the previous government did.
Yeah, definitely. But we had a great conversation today, guys. I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Candid. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Candid242 to get updates and to watch, well, listen to our show. So keep it real, Bahamas.